Welcome to Nuggets Inc., the Denver Post podcast about all things Denver Nuggets. I'm your host, Matt Schubert, and I'm joined today by Mike Singer, our Nuggets beat writer. We'll be talking about a myriad of topics, from free agency to the playoffs to how in the world is Michael Malone going to manage all those minutes. Isaiah Thomas is coming back. The All-Star break is nearly here. Is Nikola Jokic a first-team All-NBAer? We're jumping into all that and more coming up next. All right, joined here by Mike Singer, our Nuggets beat writer, here for our first podcast, our virginal run as Nuggets Inc. Are you excited to get started here?
Very excited, very excited.
So let's jump right into the topics. First off, at this point, the Nuggets are a number two seed in the Western Conference. Whether or not they stay in that two spot, who knows? That's still up in the air. I think there's other teams. Oklahoma City could certainly make a run at them. But it looks like home court advantage is something that's going to happen. They're definitely making the playoffs. I think at the beginning of the season, you would have said, what's the expectations? Well, let's get in the playoffs. Now that that's a given, what do you think the recalibrated expectations for this team are?
It's a great question. And to your point, 100%, get to the playoffs. That was the goal leading into it. They haven't made it in 5 years. It was, let's get to the playoffs with this young core, this young iteration. Let's see where they can go. At this point, given that they were in first place for a vast majority of the first half of the season, given that they're in second place now, right behind the Warriors, in my opinion, I think they are a second round team. And once they get to the second round, I believe that they're playing with house money. I think that given that home court advantage is obviously very much in play, a top four seed, you have the expectation that you would win that first round series. They are 24-4 at home. They have the best home record in the NBA. Obviously, there are extenuating circumstances. There are matchups that you don't want to see. They don't want to see LeBron in the first round. I don't think anyone wants to see LeBron in the first round if the Lakers make it.
Never lost a first-round series, LeBron James.
Correct. And he's obviously gone to 8 straight NBA finals, so that is not something you would want to see if you are the Nuggets. You don't want to see Houston. They've had, historically, a lot of trouble with Houston. I know they just ended their 9-game losing streak to the Rockets. James Harden, Chris Paul, obviously, are extremely difficult covers. So there are some tough matchups for the first round, but I think that the Nuggets should advance past the first round. And at that point, given that you haven't made the playoffs in 5 years, second round, you are on to, you know, bigger, broader horizons. Who knows? Like I said, I think you're playing with house money at that point. And let's say they get the 2 or the 3 seed. Maybe you're playing in OKC, depending on home court advantage. That's a fascinating matchup and one that the Nuggets have had the advantage on so far this year. So to your point, the expectations have been raised significantly given how well they've started. And I don't think they would be content in the least just to make the playoffs. They've talked a lot about making noise in the playoffs.
There's right now, I think they're set up to play the San Antonio Spurs would be who they would face in the first round. That seems like that'd be almost perfect for them, that's something that would be a good introduction. Yes, you're going against Greg Popovich. You're going against some veterans, but they've got more depth. They've certainly got a better backcourt. How do you think that plays out? They get something like that. Are there any other teams you think they really would like to see that maybe they would be gunning for?
You know, what's funny is I believe earlier this year, the Nuggets had a weird back-to-back against the San Antonio Spurs, 2 games in 3 days against them. And Michael Malone talked about treating that like a playoff series. He was sort of preemptively saying, we are going to scout them like it's a playoff series. There are going to be adjustments. I think the Spurs won that first one. Yeah. Nuggets came back, won the second one. So that is something, you know, I guess you get a little bit of a taste of it in the regular season, but the one thing that you just can't account for is playoff basketball is a different beast. Only Paul Millsap, Mason Plumlee have had any real experience in the postseason. I think it is dangerous to assume that such a young team will automatically translate, such a young team that's done so well in the regular season, that success will automatically translate to the postseason. I think that's an unfair expectation. So to your point, I think the Spurs would be a good matchup for them. I think they would be favored. But Greg Popovich is a wizard. He's especially a wizard you know, come April, May, and June. It would be there'd be so many layers to it, and that Michael Malone uses Greg Popovich or cites Greg Popovich as a mentor to him. They have a long history. LaMarcus Aldridge is obviously a very tough cover. DeMar DeRozan is a very tough cover. And again, the Nuggets will basically just be dipping their feet into the postseason, and there are a ton of question marks that come with that when you invite sort of that environment.
One of the things I think that's going to come up, and I'm really curious to see that how this really works itself out, especially in the playoffs, the Nuggets have so many guys that have earned minutes. They have, because of the fact that they've just had so many injuries, guys have had to fill in. Monty Morris looks like a starting point guard. Malik Beasley was a star there for about 2 or 3 weeks, just unbelievable. Tomahawk dunking on everybody.
Right.
What do you think happens when, at some point, presumably, everybody's healthy? All of a sudden, they've got Isaiah Thomas they can bring off the bench. They've got a healthy Gary Harris. They've got all of their starting five, which I think there's only played like 2 or 3 games together so far this season. How does that minutes crunch shake out at that point?
It's hilarious because Malone was asked about this last night, and he goes, I'm just going to read the tea leaves. He goes, I don't have a great answer for you. This is a problem that we are going to address once we get to it. At this point, Isaiah Thomas's return is imminent. Maybe he comes back Wednesday against the Kings. Perhaps he comes back against Dallas the first game after the All-Star break. Either way, it's imminent. Gary Harris is still dealing with nagging injuries. I think it's an adductor strain at this point that is keeping him sidelined. I think he's missed 23 games so far. So that is not an insignificant amount of time. Once all these guys are healthy, to your point, I don't think you can relegate Monte Morris to the bench. He has been so valuable. He's so secure with the ball. He's so steady. He hits clutch shots. He conducts the offense with poise. You can't just remove that chemistry from the second unit. He's been so invaluable.
Well, statistically, you look at him, I think he's top five on the team in plus minus. He's their fourth in PER, and say what you will about PER, it's at least a decent sort of way to measure a guy's impact on the game. And you think, well, at what point does Isaiah Thomas see the court? Because you've got these two guys already that, I mean, Jamal Murray, you're not taking him off the court. Monty Morris, I just don't see how you can. Is it going to be just 10 minutes here, 5 minutes there?
I mean, before we, earmark Isaiah Thomas for any sort of time, let's acknowledge that Isaiah Thomas hasn't played in 11 months.
Yeah.
The last time he was a reliable, consistent player was in Boston during that unbelievable postseason run 2 years ago. And then he obviously had his hip surgery, got traded to Cleveland, got traded to Los Angeles, bounced around. I mean, he has really had a difficult trajectory since that hip injury when he left Boston. So the Nuggets don't necessarily know what they have in him. And if he is not contributing on the offensive end, you can't afford to play him.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a liability on defense. He has been his entire career. That's, you know, not a knock on his effort. That's just the reality of it.
He's just too small, right?
He's 5'9". If he's not contributing on offense, and you know, then I don't think you can afford to play him. And I don't know how many games it takes before you realize, okay, this is what we're getting in Isaiah Thomas. This is what we know we can get from him. And at that point, is it really worth removing Monte Morris, removing Malik Beasley, both guys who have just flourished with more minutes? Is it really, I mean, at this point, you're talking about seeding. You're talking about rhythm, chemistry, heading down the stretch.
And I think chemistry is the one that I would be most concerned with, just because I'm sure Isaiah Thomas has just been sitting over thinking, well, wait until I get in there. And then all of a sudden, let's say he doesn't get the minutes. Does this mess with the locker room in any way? I've read so many stories about how he's been a plus in the locker room, and this team really loves to play with each other. But then all of a sudden, minutes start getting taken away. Guys' roles sort of diminish a little bit. How do you deal with that?
Well, let's also, you know, the tough dynamic here is that obviously everyone on the Nuggets wants to win, but Isaiah Thomas is on a veterans minimum contract. He is going to be a free agent this summer. Do his interests necessarily align with the Nuggets' interests? When he is out there, does he need to score points so that he can show that he can still play and thus earn his next contract? Or does he need to be a cog in the system and help the team, facilitate with Joker? I mean, let's talk about fourth quarter crunch time. Do you really want to take the ball out of Joker's hands, who's hit a couple of clutch game-winning shots this year? What about Jamal Murray's hands? What about Gary Harris, who might be your most trustworthy three-point shooter come into games? Are you really just going to let Isaiah Thomas create and facilitate in isolation and hope that it yields something? And, you know, it's so difficult to just assume what he will be when he comes back. I think he averaged 28, 29 points with the Celtics when he was fifth in MVP voting 2 years ago. But what level of Isaiah Thomas are we going to get? Is it going to be Boston? Is it going to be Cleveland or LA? Is it going to be somewhere in the middle? Is it going to be a 7 out of 10 from what we saw with Boston? Maybe 70% of what he was doing, is he valuable? Is he valuable if he's a negative on the defensive end? Those are questions that Michael Malone has to answer. You know, last night he called it a good problem to have. And when we asked Paul Millsap about it, he goes, listen, I'm just happy I'm not the coach and I don't have to deal with that question.
Yeah, for sure. Because this is the NBA, of course, we have to talk about the offseason. There are so many assets up and down this roster right now. And you look at contracts, you look at the control that this team has on some of these young assets. If they wanted to make a big trade, they could do it. I have heard numerous national pundits speculating they could have been in on the Anthony Davis sweepstakes. They could do it again this summer if they wanted to. What sort of chatter did you hear at all? Anything?
So here's my read on the Anthony Davis situation. If the Nuggets were ever to get involved in it, it would have been at the trade deadline because it makes zero sense to mortgage your future, give up on guys. I don't know what it would have taken. Maybe Gary Harris or Jamal Murray. Obviously, Paul Millsap would have been in the deal. Maybe picks. Maybe Michael Porter Jr. Do you really do that for 1 year? Of course, like it's a hard no. You don't even consider it, in my opinion. So maybe they kicked it around for the opportunity to play with Anthony Davis for 2 years, this postseason and next postseason. But given that that has passed, given that it made no sense for the Pelicans to do a deal prior to the trade deadline because Boston couldn't get involved, because they didn't know where the New York Knicks lottery picks stood, whether it's number one, you know, potentially allows you the opportunity to get Zion Williamson. It made no sense for them to trade Anthony Davis before the trade deadline. Therefore, that didn't work with the Nuggets timeline. The Nuggets have talked incessantly about growing organically and all the player development. Let's look at their track record. Gary Harris has become a player after a poor rookie season. Jamal Murray has become there was borderline all-star chatter. And, you know, we didn't even get into Nikola Jokic and what he has become, the foundation of the franchise. These are there are systemic growth from all of these young guys, and it would sort of just undermine the entire system, the entire operation, the blueprint that they've laid by just going big for someone like Anthony Davis for a quick fix.
Let me play devil's advocate.
Please.
Okay, so I get what you're saying. Organic growth, great team development, great player development.
Is that a lame answer?
No. I totally get it, and it's probably a good measured response. What I would say is this. What's your ceiling? What's the ceiling with this team unless you add another guy like an Anthony Davis? Can you get to an NBA Finals with that team? I don't know. I don't think that we know for sure. Maybe. It certainly seems possible. You have all that depth, but at some point, the team chemistry is going to erode if everybody's not getting the minutes that they want and they feel like they've earned. And furthermore, you need, I think it's been proven, 2 to 3 stars to really make a big run in the NBA playoffs.
So my personal belief is that the Nuggets need to wait and see. Again, this is why I wouldn't have made the trade. The Nuggets need to wait and see on what they have in Michael Porter Jr. If Michael Porter Jr. hits, then this team with this core can do it on its own. They don't need to go sign a big free agent. If Michael Porter Jr. hits, this team will contend for the next 5 to 6 years. And I don't think I'm going out on any sort of thin limb by saying that. You talked about 2 or 3 stars. Jamal Murray is becoming that. Nikola Jokic is already that.
Oh, for sure.
I don't know that Gary Harris has quote-unquote star potential, but Gary Harris is a rock-solid player.
Oh, I think he's a great role player. I think there's no doubt that he can hit that ceiling at the very least.
Right. And then, you know, you look at a guy like Malik Beasley. Does Malik Beasley have a higher ceiling than Gary Harris? You know, 2 months ago, that would have been a ludicrous question. It's not a ludicrous question anymore. Malik Beasley has had this pretty impressive spurt of the last 2 months that I think the Nuggets are starting to ask themselves, how valuable is this guy? What sort of potential does he have? How sustainable is this? Is this real, what we're seeing? Does that maybe make a guy like Gary Harris available?
Well, and you could probably say the same thing about Monty Morris too, right? He looks like a starter. He looks like a guy who could be... I'm forgetting the name. Memphis's point guard,
Mike Conley.
Like a Mike Conley level point guard, measured, knows how to play the game, smart, plays angles. I mean, that floater is almost automatic. He has all these different sort of tools to his game, but not fantastic athleticism.
Not bad for the 51st pick in the draft.
No, not at all.
So, I mean, you talk about assets. At this point, obviously, we just got past the trade deadline. You're always sort of assessing what is a guy's value. I believe that Malik Beasley would probably command a first-round pick at this point. I think Monte Morris would probably command a first-round pick at this point. I'm not saying that the Nuggets are interested in parting with these guys, and sort, you know, as they've sort of taken them through the car wash, and these guys have grown within their system. And, you know, part of the thing that is so interesting and unique about the Nuggets this year is their locker room is so young. They've all grown together. They all keep each other in check. And it's not like they've added bits and pieces here and they have to worry about this chemistry that you were talking about. All these guys, it is an insanely tight-knit group from Torrey Craig up to Joker.
Do you think, is this smart drafting? Is this player development? Is it a little bit of both? Why are they able to find these players in later rounds when you got teams like the Phoenix Suns who can't put anything together and they've got top 10 picks every year?
Right. I mean, that's probably the most impressive thing about where the Nuggets are is how healthy of an organization they are. Their highest pick was 7 in Jamal Murray. That is hit. They missed, obviously, on Emmanuel Mudiay, but they have done this without the top 3 picks, the top 4 picks that generally it takes to, you know, do a quick rebuild. They haven't done that. This has been finding value in the middle of the draft. Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernan Gomez, I think 16th and 19th. Monte Morris, 51st pick. Obviously Joker, 41st pick. Torrey Craig, undrafted. Like, there's
out of nowhere.
Out of Australia. I mean, they find value where other teams seemingly don't see it. And it seems like they just turn over rocks that aren't there. And that's a lot of credit to Tim Connolly. It's a lot of credit to Arturis Karnisovas, the Nuggets GM. They do their due diligence. They have a reliable international scout, Rafael Yuk, who found Joker, you know, several years before 2014 when they drafted him. This is a... I just wrote about this on, you know, I had a front page story on Sunday that Tim Connolly says we recognize our market. We recognize our deficiencies in relation to an LA, a New York, a Boston, whatever it may be. Our best hope of building from within is drafting guys who both have potential and are the right kind of guys, the right character guys that will fit within our system. And they've sort of done that to a T. And let's not discredit the job that Michael Malone has done. Came here 4 years ago, same time Joker did. He's grown with these guys. So they all trust him. Jamal Murray and him are, you know, lockstep. That's how tight these dudes are. So any sort of notion that there would be some egos or there would be some bickering over the minutes, it hasn't shown up yet. And, you know, even Monte Morris, he talks about, he's extremely tight with Isaiah Thomas. He goes, listen, if all we care about is winning, if that's allegedly all we preach about, then no one should care who gets the minutes. That's what he said last night. And that's sort of the mantra of this team.
So you mentioned Mike Malone. One thing I wanted to bring up, Nuggets hit a little bit of a rough patch on this road trip. You were along for the ride.
Yeah.
On a couple occasions, Michael Malone, sort of called out the effort of the Nuggets. This was something that I think he had been questioned for doing too much at previous stops. Do you think it was the right call, or is he pushing the wrong buttons? What is your thought on him going to that, the effort, questioning the effort of guys?
I think it was the right call. Again, this team is young. They were starting to feel themselves. They had a big celebration in Minnesota after Michael Malone secured the All-Star coaching bid earlier this weekend. So, you know, you have that huge high. You beat Houston on Friday. You beat Minnesota on Saturday. Then you go immediately to Detroit You go immediately to Detroit, and that's a big letdown.
Lay an egg.
More than lay an egg. They got pulverized. They didn't even compete. It was embarrassing and tough to watch. So when you lay that sort of an egg, and you know, maybe Michael Malone gave you a little bit of runway. Maybe he sort of wanted to test his team. Maybe he wanted to see if they had matured, if they were able to take a little bit of celebration and yet not take their foot off the pedal. Well, that's not the case. They took their foot off the pedal. They laid an egg in Detroit, laid an egg in Brooklyn, and this team needed to hear it. They needed a little bit of introspection. After that Brooklyn game, or actually at halftime of the Brooklyn game, I think the Nets had scored 72 points. Mason Plumlee called out his team. He was the only, I think he started that night. He was the only one who was ready to play. And I talked to Torrey Craig about this after the game, and Torrey Craig goes, Mason Plumlee was questioning us. Like, what's wrong? What's the issue here? After the game, Isaiah Thomas, I know we mentioned him earlier. He got up and was on some of the guys just for sort of their buy-in. Will Barton was frustrated just with the defense. He few words, was upset. It was very much an introspective locker room that was questioning itself. There were some people wondering, is it close to the panic button? How concerned should we be that this is going to linger? You know, I think that there were reasons for it. It's leading up to the All-Star break. The trade deadline was around. They are fatigued. They are injured. There are reasons for it. So I don't think it's the panic button, but you know, natural human reaction. You exhale after a big celebration like they had in Minnesota. And I think Malone just needed to recognize the need to get on his team and just sort of lay into them and say, hey guys, we haven't done squat yet.
There's definitely something to be said for that week or two before the All-Star break.
It's a weird time.
When guys are just like ready to take a break, ready to just, you know, put pause and, you know, go drink with a little umbrella in it or something like that.
Sure,
How about yourself? How's it been for you on the beat here for the first time? Gosh, you've been all over the place.
It's been fantastic. I've made this joke to some of my fellow contemporaries who I see when I'm traveling around. You know, doesn't every first year beat writer get a first place team? isn't that how that works? I feel just so fortunate. For anyone who doesn't know, I was in Chicago for 6 years, moved to Denver a couple weeks before the season started, more than jumped right in. I dove in head first two times over, and you know, that was the only option. It's been a fantastic team to cover so far. Like I said, a really young team, so these guys don't necessarily have a lot of egos. It all starts with Joker. He's humble. He jokes around. He doesn't necessarily love his media sessions.
That's apparent.
Yeah, I mean, but okay, you know, we can live with that. He still does them. You know, that's all you can really ask for. It's been, you know, I had covered some of the Bulls teams, 2014, 2015. I had covered some the D Rose teams. I had covered the Cavs. I've been around for the last few finals. I used to work for USA Today, and so I had a pretty good sense of expectations. I had a pretty good sense of professionalism, the standard that I was expected to meet, and that's sort of how I've approached it. Is just always try to be there, always try to be accountable, always try to come prepared, ask solid questions, do your research, try to think of unique angles. You know, you talk to the coach two or three times a day, you're going to grade on him pretty quickly if you don't do your due diligence, if you don't think about, you know, what you're asking him, the implications of what you're asking him, the phrasing, all of it. It's just a, you know, it's eye-opening, it's sobering, it's exciting, it's all of those things.
So at what point in this season did you realize, oh, they've caught on to something here, this team's something special?
You know, they started 9-1, so everyone jumped on the train real fast. You know, you want to be measured.
Well, the Clippers started off great too, you know.
That's a great point. But then they beat the Clippers in the first game of the season, so yeah. they had that trump card. So, you know, as soon as they get off the 9-1 start, then they lose four in a row. You're like, okay, you know what? They're going to be a really good team. Maybe they got to this record. What does that make you? 9-5, but no one really thought they would get to 9-5 in that manner. You just sort of saw how well Joker was playing, how well Jamal Murray was playing. He had his 48-point night against Boston, and, you know, it's pretty eye-opening. A 21-year-old dropping 48 points against Boston, against Kyrie Irving. So you knew that the pieces were there. It was just a question of whether it would manifest and whether everything would grow like organically, like we talked about. I mean, then all the injuries hit, and they didn't. The defense definitely regressed, but the record didn't. They kept winning.
Yeah.
And that was probably the most stunning thing, is that when you plugged in guys like Juancho Hernangómez, you plugged in Torrey Craig, you give Monte Morris huge responsibility, you give Malik Beasley an increased role, they all thrived for various points. And I recognize that it wasn't exactly sustainable. Hernangómez has hit a wall. Monte Morris hit a wall, bounced back from it. Malik Beasley hasn't been this good for this long. And Torrey Craig is not going to shoot 40% from three throughout a season.
It's hard to imagine.
It's very hard to imagine. It's not going to happen. But these guys, you know, stepped into these roles, expanded, and they thrived in it. And so that's sort of been the story of this team. And so when you realize their depth, when you realize the talent and the potential and how young they are, that's when you sort of started to wrap your head around it. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you hear the whispers about Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr., you add this talented guy who should have been a top three pick if it weren't for his back surgeries to this infusion of talent already. And you know, you start to try to just, again, try to be measured, but say, like, man, they might be onto something here. They might be onto something serious here. You know, I don't think it is, you know, even too risky to say that a Western Conference Finals at minimum should be in their future in the next few years.
Yeah, you could certainly see that happening. I have to say, there was one game that really sticks out in my mind, and it wasn't a great game for them. It was the game where Jokic didn't attempt, what was it, one shot, something like that. Can't recall who the opponent. Yeah, Memphis. And it seemed like a switch flip for him after that game, that he sort of came to a realization, I have to shoot. I have to take over games. I am the guy for that.
Yeah, no question. That was a turning point in the season. It was an early turning point. That day, Jokic had been fined the NBA. The announcement came only a couple hours before the game. I think it's safe to say that everybody was a little bit surprised of the timing and the manner that was levied, including Joker himself. So, you know, I wouldn't say he was necessarily in the best mindset that night. And his only shot that he took was the potential game winner, the three from the wing. The very last shot off an inbounds pass. And, you know, he missed it. And the obvious question is, how can your franchise player, can you live with your franchise player just taking one shot? And the answer is, of course, no. So I asked Michael Malone post-game, I go, what does it do to your offense when your best player only takes one shot? And he sort of looked at me, he was like, you know, I don't know what it does. And he wobbled around some other answer, and then he basically goes, listen, we need him to take more shots. We need him to be more aggressive. I asked in the post-game locker room, I asked Mason Plumlee. He said we need him to be more aggressive. Same thing from Paul Millsap. On down the line, they all recognize that Joker is the center point and the fulcrum of their team. They all expect him to shoot. When he gets close, when he's in the post, when he has a mismatch, they all expect him to take advantage of it. When he doesn't, it throws everything out of whack. To your point, I think that a switch did flip then, and he recognized and sort of embraced and welcomed the responsibility of scoring, of facilitating. I mean, you look at the numbers he had in January. I think he had 6 triple-doubles, which preceded his all-star selection. So the dude recognizes his place in the franchise.
Yeah, so much more aggression. And one play that really sticks out to me, and it probably gets lost in the shuffle, was in Minnesota. He throws a baseball throw all the way across the court with, I think, like a minute to go. Yeah. Like, so much on the line.
Right
on the money.
Right.
The layup, and that's basically what won the game for them. And that's just one play where you think, wow, the confidence to
the
throw
gall.
That. Yeah.
The gall is how I will describe it. No. So, again, that was the night Malone comes out talking to the media soaking wet. His team had just doused him in water, celebrating him getting the All-Star coaching nod. And we asked him about that play, and he goes, when he saw Joker winding up and cocking back to throw it to Malik Beasley, he goes, Nikola, what the hell? Nice pass, nice pass. And he goes, that thing hung up there like a Ray Guy punt for 4.8 seconds. And it just sat there and just dropped into Beasley's arms.
Perfect.
Perfect pass. I mean, you know, I don't really cover the Broncos, but maybe they could use him. Beasley just lays it in, and Joker recognized Andrew Wiggins had fallen asleep on the play.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many times has that been said?
Yeah.
And Joker just exposed it. Even last night, he tried to take advantage of it. He tried to grab the ball quickly from the ref and sort of arrange his guys because he recognized some of his guys were down court quickly, and it ended up being a turnover because sometimes he's on a different plane than other guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the confidence, the gall, the understanding that, hey, you know, this franchise goes as I go. I am going to take that bull by the horn, and I am going to make audacious passes. I am going to do stuff that I see, and you have entrusted me to do that, and he recognizes that.
You think first team All-NBA for him this year?
It's a possibility. I think first or second team All-NBA, definitely. You know, it's loaded. You got to look at those all-star starters. You know, Paul George, I think, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
James Harden, Steph Curry, Giannis, then... You know, is it does it come down to Embiid, Kawhi, or Joker in the front court? So he's 100% in the conversation. And, you know, when Malone started floating his name for MVP, I think some people raised their eyebrows a little bit. Like, okay, you know, my read on it was that when he started floating his name, I believe it was in around December, I think that he was just trying to get some all-star attention for Joker. Well done. You know, you do your ploy, and, it obviously played out. But... he's a legitimate MVP candidate.
You can't argue that.
I think there are four people in the conversation. He's either third or fourth, him or Paul George. Steph Curry, James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo are the top two. And if he finishes third, if he finishes fourth, that is a massive win. It doesn't, if he wins it, if he doesn't, so be it. He has gone from franchise focal point to NBA superstar, that in no uncertain terms.
And you have to go all the way back to Carmelo Anthony to find a player with that sort of impact for
on
this
the Nuggets.
Franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a long time, and he seems like he's just getting started. That he's got at least a decade left, especially the way his game is.
Right.
You think he's going to age well? This isn't somebody that relies on crazy athleticism.
Right.
This is guile. This is skill.
Yeah.
Positioning, all that sort of stuff.
It's a great point. We saw Dwayne Wade last night. He's a guy who has relied on, early in his career, athleticism. But as his career went on, just craftiness, just skill, craftiness, knowing the defense, taking advantage of them, exploiting them. Joker would be the first one to admit, dude's not athletic. No. I've been joking. I think it actually helps him that he doesn't jump that high off the floor. Less risk of rolling an ankle. So... you know, I think he's got – I know he has way more triple-doubles. I think he's got 11 triple-doubles this year, and I think maybe 6 or 7 dunks this year. So you're 100% right. It is his skill level that is predicated all of this success. It is the ability to read a defense. It is his vision. It is his unselfishness. How many other 0.5s do you see leading a break? I mean, he is so, so unique. Just in that regard. And, you know, I was talking to a Nuggets assistant coach yesterday, and he was sort of telling me just sort of the names that he sees when he sees Jokic. And he mentioned Marc Gasol. He mentioned Nowitzki. He mentioned maybe a little bit of Tim Duncan.
I would put Arvydas Sabonis in there.
Definitely.
That he reminds me, I think he's going to age much like Arvydas did.
Right.
Maybe not as big, hulking big as Arvydas was, but the same skill level.
Right. No, you're dead on. So, you know, it's all those guys wrapped into one. It's just he's so unique a player. I mean, Tim Duncan was a prototypical, you know, big man, prototypical 4-5. He sort of played all the angles, was somewhat slow, not particularly athletic, plodding, but was so smart, was so crafty. That's what this trajectory that Joker's on. You don't want to assume a guy is going to be a Hall of Famer, but he's on that path. And those aren't my words. Those are Michael Malone's words.
Yeah, I think I started when I saw he got that big contract this summer, and I knew he was a good player. The only thing I thought was, well, if he's your best player, where are you going? What is the ultimate ceiling for that team? And I thought, maybe second round. I think at this point, I look at it and I think, oh, no, Western Conference Finals, maybe championship. He could probably be the best player on a championship-level team.
Yeah, I don't think that that's crazy. I mean, when you're talking about a guy who's in the MVP conversation, naturally they are you know, one would think good enough to lead a team to a title. You know, you talk about guys who make their teams better. Does James Harden necessarily make his team as good as Nikola Jokic makes the Nuggets? I don't know. Does it help when, you know, you go on a string of 200 some odd buckets without an assist?
Yeah.
I don't know, as Harden did earlier this, not too long ago. I don't know, as opposed to Joker, who relishes getting 10 assists a game.
Yeah, ball is not as sticky with
Ball is Nikola. Not sticky, no, it's a little bit slick.
Yeah. All right, well, Mr. Singer, I think I've taken up enough of your time for today.
All good.
Great talking to you. Hope we do this again sometime soon.
Awesome, thank you so much. I appreciate it.